Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Retail Online Integration Webinar, 5 Steps to Creating a Targeted Online Loyalty Strategy, sponsored by CDC Software. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration and the host of today's event. So a new visitor has visited your site. Congratulations, that's awesome. But now what? A business can't run on one-time customers alone. You have to keep that customer coming back for more. That's what online loyalty and rewards programs are all about, and that's why they're becoming increasingly popular in the world of e-commerce. Loyalty programs can be challenging, but they can also be extremely successful in allowing your business to gain new customers and keep the old. That's what we're here today to learn about, loyalty programs. In this session, you'll learn from experts Deborah Ellis, founder of the multi-channel marketing consultancy Wilson Ellis Consulting, and Kevin Butler, the marketing programs manager at CDC Software, about the 5 steps to creating a targeted marketing strategy. After the event, you'll walk away knowing how to identify different types of customers so you can market to them more effectively, measure the effectiveness of your online loyalty program, and use auctions and rewards programs to keep customers coming back for more. If we miss anything during the presentation, don't worry. You can ask questions during the Q&A session at the end. Before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions during and at the end of the hour, so you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. So with that, take it away, Deborah.
Thank you, Melissa. Today we're talking about how you can create a targeted online loyalty strategy. I'd like to thank everyone for taking your time to join us and hope that the information I'm sharing will help you find a better way to keep your customers longer. Because improving customer loyalty is the single most important thing you can do for your business. An effective customer loyalty program builds long-term relationships, increases lifetime value, and reduces costs. It's a win-win-win strategy that increases your revenue and your profitability. And I know you already know this. All marketers know this. So the question that I often ask myself is, why do most marketing strategies focus more on getting customers than keeping them? One of the reasons is that acquisition is easily measured. All you have to do is look at your database, and you can see that last year you had 1 million customers, and this year you have 2 million customers, and you increased your number of people who buy from you by 100%. And that is a good goal. But keeping them is a better one. Another reason still goes back to the easily measured, but most marketers are not, in fact, company owners. They report to senior executives and to management and to company owners. And so when you walk into a board meeting and they say, what have you accomplished this past year? Well, I kept the customers that I had. Just doesn't sound as good as I got 1 million new customers. Certainly it's better than I lost 1 million customers, but a lot of people don't even look at the attrition as much as they do the acquisition. There are 5 steps to creating a targeted online strategy. The first one is knowing your customers, and this is your foundation. You have to know your customers really well to know what you need to do in order to keep them and keep them happy. This is really the most important step. So we're going to spend a little time on it, and we're going to look at some numbers, and we're going to talk about some things, and please, please bear with me. Don't let your eyes glaze over. I promise I won't go too deep in the numbers. If you have questions about the numbers later, you can shoot me an email, and I'm happy to answer them at your convenience. Customers are not equal. They behave differently, and they make different contributions to your business. So when you're creating your loyalty program, you want your loyalty program to reward people for the behavior that best benefits your business. And in order to do that, you have to know the different customer types. The earlier in the process that you can identify a customer type after it's been that he or she's been acquired, the better you can market to him or her. Adapting your marketing message and your loyalty strategy to the behavior increases your responses and it ultimately reduces costs. Customers follow a life cycle. In the olden days as in before Google, marketers knew how to profile their customers and where they were most likely to find matches. The process wasn't particularly easy, but it was relatively simple. Things are much, much more complex today. In addition to companies seeking prospects with similarities to existing customers, people find companies through search and social networks. And this ability to attract customers without aggressively marketing or investing is very appealing. It's almost like free advertising. But remember when your parents told you there was nothing really free in this world? I hate to be the one to tell you, but they were right. There's a high price to be paid for free customers. And that price quite often ends with lost revenue and decrease in profits. This is why it's very important to understand the customer life cycle and design your marketing and loyalty strategy around it. In this chart, you see how people tend to flow in their life cycle from where they start as newbies to where they end, resting in peace. When people make their very first purchase, they are newbies, and it's very hard to tell where they're going to go next, but there's some signs that will give you a few clues, and I'm going to share these signs with you so that you can hopefully develop your loyalty strategy around this and improve the way that you retain your customers. New customers always follow one of three paths. If you could see me, you would see me pointing at my monitor here. But since you can't see me, I'm going to tell you. The most profitable path is the active participant cycle. They move into this cycle by purchasing three or more times. During their lifespan, they'll represent different types until their life as your customer is complete. In some cases, the lifespan will be very close to the individual's life. Service companies such as hotels and banks come to mind because if their customers are satisfied, they tend to stay with them a lifetime. Companies selling products or services for specific life periods will find that satisfied customers often have multiple lifespans. An example of this is children's products. The first lifespan will begin with the first child, and depending on the age or sex difference of the children, there may be multiple lifespans within a decade, followed by a dormant stage until the parents move into their grandparents' cycle, and then a new lifespan will begin. Knowing where people are in their lifespan and in the life cycle helps you to identify how you can target them best. The alternate path from newbies is discount or hidden runners, which are often dead ends. Occasionally, they can be redirected, and you see the arrows where they're going to the active. Occasionally, you can redirect them into that active path, but it's rare. There are 10 types of customers within your company's community. 9 of them are in your database. The 10th is an anomaly that's created with the social media world. The 10 customer types are newbies, The newbies have ordered less than three times. Typically, it takes three purchases for a customer to become a buyer. The first purchase is a test to see if you're going to keep your marketing promise, if you can be trusted. The second is an add-on item the first test worked, but we want to make sure. By the time the person makes the third purchase, they're usually committed to your company and probably fit within your target demographics. The exceptions to the newbie to buyer movement are discount and hit-and-run shoppers. I touched on those briefly. Discount shoppers only buy sale items. If you're not discounting it, they're not going to buy it. They never, ever, ever pay full price. But if they're placed in the same marketing cycle as active customers, you're going to lose money because you're going to be sending the promotional pieces to them. You're going to be investing your resources in trying to sell to people that are not going to buy. If you have a specific program designed to move discounted merchandise, they are very, very valuable as a liquidation source. Hit-and-run shoppers purchase once or twice, and then they never buy again. They don't have service issues that alienate them. You didn't do anything wrong. They just simply don't need your products or services for a regular lifespan. One of my favorite examples of a hit-and-run shopper is one of my experiences. My daughter decided that she was going to dress in gothic apparel one Halloween, so I placed an online order during the first week of October for a complete outfit that fits a preteen. I have not ordered from this company since, and quite a bit of time has passed, but I'm still receiving promotional pieces. It's a total waste of their marketing dollars. Nobody in my family is going to be wearing gothic apparel except maybe for another Halloween. So this is where you're going to see some of your clues. If you happen to be a gothic apparel business, all of your customers that are inquired in the few weeks before Halloween are suspect as high-risk candidates for hit-and-run shoppers.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to break in for a second because we do have a question, and it is about and I just wanted to ask now because we're talking about discounts and hit-and-run. Can you talk a little bit about Groupon and how your experience is relevant here in terms of repeat purchases?
I do not find Groupon to be an effective tool for acquiring lifetime customers. It's the people that tend to use the Groupon are strictly discount customers. They are living for those discounts. And my clients that have tested it have found that these people purchase, and you have to do extensive discounts for Groupons. So it's pretty much a loss leader. They come in, they take the discount, and then they're not even responding to secondary discount offers. I would recommend that you test it, but monitor it carefully. Make sure you track everything, because I haven't seen any good long-term benefits from Groupon.
Okay, thanks, Deborah.
Sure. When you're looking for the hit-and-runners, it may be harder in your business than it is in a gothic business, but it's still doable. You want to look at your items, at the items or services that were purchased and the sources from where the customer was acquired to see if there was a commonality. Quite often you will see that maybe you did a press release or there was a piece that was picked up in a newspaper that sent you customers online. They weren't actually bought customers, but they came online, but they make the one purchase and then they're gone for that one item that received the promotion. You need to check out seasonality and location as well, particularly if you have bricks and mortar stores, because people may be buying certain times of the year or at certain locations as they're traveling. So the nice thing is we don't have to do this manually. There's computers, and you can track this information, and you can analyze them. You just need to know to look for them. The sooner that you identify these people that are unlikely to buy again, the sooner you can stop investing your marketing dollars. Active customers who have purchased three or more times with one order within the last 3 months. Your goal is to move these active customers to Rising Star. That's your sole goal. You want to move them from point A to point B, and your rewards program needs to do that. To a degree, airlines do this well because they offer bonus points and preferred seating when customers reach a certain travel point within a given time. I say within a degree because frequent flyer programs are using a carrot and stick approach. They offer the additional benefits if you travel more, but take away points if you don't. The strategy on high-ticket items is risky because it increases customer alienation. Limiting usage to a specific time frame for lower ticket purchases increases urgency, so you've got to find that balance that works for you. Always be sure to measure your cause and effect if your program is using a carrot and stick approach. Rising Stars are the customers who have purchased three or more times within the last 12 months. They're at a crossroads. You want to reach out to them so that you move them up to the platinum level. Make sure they understand the benefits of growing their relationship with you. A lot of the loyalty programs out there ask people to sign up, but they don't clearly explain what you're signing up for, the benefits, and then when people are talking with their friends say, oh, I just got this from this company, and they're like, how'd you do that? Well, I participate in their loyalty program. Well, I participate and I don't get that. So make sure that you're communicating how your program works well to the people that are out there. Your platinum customers are your best customers. They consistently order with a predictable pattern. This pattern may vary by seasons or activities, but you know you can count on these customers to buy on a regular basis. And this is where your best benefits belong. Falling stars are people who are nearing the end of their natural lifespan. It doesn't have anything to do with, you know, alienation or poor service. In some cases, they can be reactivated because you get a you renew their interest. If you're selling a product, a gaming product, for example, they might be losing interest in it, or a sports product, and they may come back if you have a promotion that entices them to do so. Social promoters are the anomaly I mentioned earlier. I'm seeing more and more of these. They're people that have never placed an order, they've never completed a transaction with a company, but they promote it on a regular basis. Responding with gratitude seems to keep them happy and keep them promoting, and you want to recognize them and try to move them into the buying cycle, but it's pretty challenging to get them to make that move. On the other hand, you have social customers, and they can be any place. They can be an active customer, a Rising Star, a Platinum. They can be any place within the other customer types. But they're buying from your company, and they're actively promoting it online. Apple has a ton of those, and if we could all be Apple, we would have a very loyal customer base, Venmo at times even. Connecting the dots between social and customer activity is very challenging at this point in time. But you need to try to do it, and one way to do it is to do it internally. Don't rely on the social platforms to provide that information. When you're talking to your customer, at point of sale, ask them for their Twitter handle, their Facebook, ask them to connect with you so that you are building those connections. Because knowing who is promoting your business makes it much easier to respond with the right message. Rest in peace customers have completed their lifespan. They may reactivate at a later date, but at this time, marketing is a waste of resources. Knowing your customers also includes knowing the numbers that drive your business. Now, here's a lot of numbers up here, and I'm not going to go into all this detail because we simply do not have time. But when you look at your customer dynamics as a whole, it allows you to see how your business is trending. if you look at the acquisition and attrition rates here, it looks like the company is improving. The same is true when you're looking at the average dollars per active customer and the average numbers of orders per active customer. But the problem is with the active customers. They are declining because this company is attracting hit-and-run customers. Traditional direct marketing metrics, the ones that you're used to looking at on a regular basis, don't show this. You're going to have to dig deep to find out what's happening beneath the surface. You also want to compare what's happening with people's first purchase. In this example, we compare the one-time, two-time, and three- or more-time purchases to see how each group is contributing to the company. Do the same thing for people that have made their last purchase within a specific year. So it gives you an idea of how you're trending. Once you have a good understanding of how your customers behave and contribute to your business, you're ready to move to step two. Let's all take a deep breath. I know, that was a lot. And we're moving to the fun part. Step two is create flexible programs. You want these programs to be easy to adapt. You want them to, you want to be able to go in and change them and adapt them to match each of your customer types and where they are in the life cycle. In the typical market and life cycle, you have people shop, they buy, they return. That's kind of what you expect. They may shop via catalog, they may shop via coupons, lots of different ways, online, offline. But that's typically how we look at the marketing cycle. There's a missing piece here, and we will look at that in just a bit. As part of your flexible strategy, you want your programs to include coupons, but in coupons, you do not want to train your people to wait for the sale. Even your platinum customers can be trained into being discount if you offer specific sales at specific times over and over again. Having Victoria's Secret does a good job with this because they have two semi-annual sales, and, of course, they have sales and promotions in between. But in between, you're not really sure what's going to be on sale, and you know that when you go to their semi-annual sales that probably what you like best may or may not be on sale. So they're not training you to delay the purchase for the sale, but they use the sales to increase their revenue. Reward points, much like the airlines, cash back, which is done quite often with the credit cards. Partnering is something that is a good opportunity for you to work with a non-competitor and help them improve their business while they help you improve your business and give people similar options with they work together. Auctions are a great way to improve customer loyalty. One of the things that you can do with the auctions is you can have specialized auctions for only your best customers, that once they reach a certain point, they get to participate in this auction, and you have the opportunity to liquidate merchandise, test new products to see how well people like it and what price point they're willing to pay. A lot of things that you can do with the auctions, and then, of course, special promotions and events. As I mentioned, there was something that was missing, and what is missing is consumption. We reach out to customers trying to get them to shop. We give them discounts, and we do promotions and points and things trying to get them to buy. Then we follow up with the service, whether it's returns and exchanges or whatever service training, whatever service is needed. But the consumption part is missed. And if people do not consume your products or services, then they will not buy more. If we were in a room, I would ask you to raise your hand, and invariably I will get 80 to 90% of the audience that raise their hand for this question. How many of you have software that you have never used? Well, are you going to upgrade it? If you haven't used it, you're not going to upgrade it. You need to have that consumption. So part of your marketing strategy and your loyalty program should be to follow up after the sale with how did the product work. From that, you get your testimonials, and you learn about your challenges, and it gives you the opportunity to go in there, fix things, learn more, and move people back into the shop buy portion of the cycle. In the corporate cycle, you have merchandise and marketing, operations, and financial, and those tend to operate as silos. Those all need to work together in order to have a fully integrated and flexible program. The third step is make participation easy. Make it easy for people to get points. They shouldn't have to log online and register to get the points. They shouldn't have to carry a membership card with them. It should be as easy as possible for them to participate in your loyalty program, because what happens when it's challenging and people miss opportunities, they have something laying around the house, and then they realize if they'd taken it in, they would have gotten additional points or whatever, then they feel like they lost something. And you don't want people feeling like they lost something when you're doing business with them. So the components of making it easy is you want integrated databases. That does not mean one single database. It does not mean that everything has to be fully integrated. It just means that as far as the customers are concerned, the information will work together. Early on, when Costco first started their online program, I placed an order from them and then decided to return it to the store, and they did not have an integrated database. So I walked in and I said, okay, I'd like to return this item. Where did you get it? I had my receipt, and she said, you got it online, and I said, yes, I did, and she said, I'll need to move to a different computer. She walked over to a separate computer, and she processed my return. It was seamless to me. For her, it was accessing a different database. Pre-populated codes, when you send an email out, have the promotion codes, the membership codes, if you have a membership program, have it pre-populated so when people log in, it's automatically there, that they don't have to remember it. Timely notifications. If you do have something that is going to expire, give them a heads up a couple of days before it expires. Detailed information. This goes back to making sure that they understand how your program works, what's included in it, and just teach them how to use your program best. And easy access to the data. Let them know how many points they have. Let them know what their cash back is coming. Surprises can be nice on your birthday, but, you know, waiting for surprises in a loyalty program is not always that nice. Step four, integrate channels and platforms. As I mentioned earlier, social and traditional are challenging to integrate, but you still need to make the effort. I have a visual here, and I hope that you can see it. It's something that I use quite often. I call it the marketing solar system. And in the center is customer relationship care. This is everything that you do with your customers, from point of sale to follow-up to fulfillment to every point. And the planets evolve around this sun. It's a good visual for how it should work. getting to that point is challenging. You have to take baby steps and you have to do it in bits and pieces, but you work to get to that. And if you would, and you can feel free to use this image if you want, because I find that when I'm training teams that having the image is very helpful. The fifth step is evaluate, enhance, and evolve. You will never get there. You will never get the perfect loyalty program. You will never get the perfect online site. You will never get to perfection. And because you will never get to perfection, there's a 75% rule. When you get there 75%, go ahead and go with it, because as you go with it, you're going to adapt and you're going to change and you're going to find what works better and what doesn't, and eventually, with any luck, you'll get to 90% and you will be continuing to doing the evaluation and the enhancing and the evolution of your strategy. One thing that you need to do when you're developing your program is you need to leverage the strength of the different channels. Each channel, each marketing channel, has specific strengths and weaknesses. In catalog and direct mail, it's very targeted. You know who you're sending these pieces to. You know what you expect from them. And you're probably predicting within 5 to 10% exactly how they'll respond. In bricks and mortar, this is face-to-face. This is where you get to actually meet your customers in person, talk to them, and that provides something that you don't have in the catalog and direct mail channel. With the Internet, it's very trackable. You can watch what people are doing, how they move, and get an idea of by how long they linger someplace, what they like, what they don't like. And then with new media, this solidifies the relationships. I am not a fan of social media in the it's all about the conversation mode, not at all. But I am a huge fan of social media in that it allows you to have unprecedented access and connection to your customers, particularly if you do not have a bricks and mortar presence, your direct mail, internet. This gives you personalized contact with individuals, one-to-one. It's the one-to-one that was promised 15 years ago. This is your opportunity to do that, and you want to leverage that strength as you go.
Let me. I just want to jump in here for a second, Deborah. We do have a couple of. We're starting to get some more questions, but some of them we can just wait till the end of the webinar. But I feel like this might be relevant right now. How do you? One of our listeners wants to know how you best decide what percentage of rewards programs should go through social versus website versus print. Is there some sort of magic formula out there?
Test. I know that's an easy answer, and I don't mean for it to be an easy answer, but I find that with companies, even in the same business that are selling essentially the same products, that their communities are very different, and it's because the company culture is different. If you have a very laid-back company culture, then most likely, I mean, that bleeds through. It goes into your catalog. It goes into your website. And it's what your customers expect. So they're going to be more interactive with you socially. So I would expect that having a higher percentage on the social side would be more effective. But if you're a very conservative company that does not have that presence, then doing it through the catalog would be more effective.
Mm-hmm. Another listener wanted you to go into a little bit more detail on social media and loyalty. I mean, maybe you could give us some examples of how to use a social channel, like, for instance, Facebook, to help out with a loyalty program or to create a loyalty program.
Well, the changes in Facebook's going to make it a lot easier because you can do the smart list, but you need to be careful with that because the smart lists are visible to people. So if you have customers that are monsters and you create a monster customer list, they are going to see that. When Google Plus opens the door, you don't have that visibility at that point in time, but it's, as I always say, technical things often break. So, again, you don't want to have a frenemy list in Google Plus. To think about social customers, and this is what blows me away, is when you go in and you look at the numbers, it's a very, very small percentage. Even in companies that I work with that are very active online, right now it's a small percentage. By small, I mean substantially less than 10% quite often of the customers that are actively participating online that are identifiable. Having said that, though, I have seen as much as four times and lifetime value on a social customer when compared to comparable customers, traditional. So it's very important to get out there. The key to it is know where your customers are. Capturing that information in your database, with your database, is a good idea because when you say, how can we connect with you online, they're going to say Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, or I get slapped around for saying this, but there's still a good percentage of people on MySpace, especially if you're in the music industry. MySpace is still a viable option. Plaxo, for some reason, teachers are using Plaxo a lot. So what we're going to see is a further fragmentation as these new social media sites come up and people diversify. We're going to see further fragmentation, and there's not going to be the ability just to go to one or two sites and access the people, which means you got to get smart quick, and you have to fail fast and try again. Once you connect with your customers, watch what resonates with them. Always use trackable information. Make sure that if you do a promotion on Facebook that it has an exclusive key code. Direct marketers know how to do this well, but a lot of them are forgetting what they know because for some reason they think social's different. Social isn't. It's a connection point. It's just a more interactive connection point. Does that answer?
Yeah, I think so. We'll see if we get any other comments from the listener. And just to clarify, Google Plus is a social network that's been started by Google to compete with Facebook. Some folks wanted to know about that.
Yes.
Sorry, did you want to say something?
I did.
Okay.
Google Plus is the fastest growing social media network in history. Its growth is phenomenal. It's at, I think, 43 million right now, and it was just launched in late June, early July. It is not open to businesses yet, but they expect to have it open before the end of the year. Watch for that. If you're not on Google Plus, get on it personally and start playing with it, start learning about it, because especially if you work with, if a lot of your customers are techies, because there seems to be a big migration of the techies from Facebook to Google Plus, as in, goodbye, I'm gone from Facebook forever.
And another thing, I mean, I know that you have a lot more to get to, but I did think this was a good question, and it relates to the social networking stuff. How about the argument or plain devil's advocate that, you know, obviously social consumers are a lot more engaged with brands, et cetera, but what about the fact that social networks consumers don't like being sold? So, in other words, they're online for friendship and social interaction, but they can smell a pitch a mile away. Do you still believe that they are a ripe market for loyalty?
Oh, absolutely. They say they don't like to be sold, but they buy.
Okay.
It's just like when you have a focus group and you sit in the focus group and you walk away from the focus group saying, well, you know, these people say they will never buy this product, and then you go through the orders and find that 5 out of the 10 people that were in your focus group saying, I would never buy this product, when their peers weren't looking, they bought the product.
Right.
So okay. What you've got to look at what people do versus what they say, because what they say they're going to do is not what they do. You cannot go into social media and just do one promotion after another. You do have to handle it different, but it is definitely becoming a social commerce field. With Facebook, with their iframes, you can actually embed a website in Facebook, which is, it's totally cool. There's some privacy issues and some proprietary concerns that you need to be aware of. But what I recommend is that people embed the look, but have the actual transaction take place on their sites. But capturing email addresses, Facebook is a great place to do that. And email marketing is relatively inexpensive when compared to catalog marketing. So it gives you an idea. It gives you a toe in the door. That is exactly mm-hmm. what it is. It gives you leads to follow.
Okay, great.
Okay. Some of the discoveries when you go through this process with your lifetime value, what you're going to find is that different customers equal different value. And you need to make sure that you are targeting the customers with your loyalty program in accordance to the value that they contribute to your business. There is a definite source effect. This is where the customers come from. Customers acquired, in my experience, customers acquired via catalog marketing will quite often be more valuable than customers acquired via e-commerce. But you can move the e-commerce customers over into catalogs, and you can certainly move catalogs into e-commerce. In fact, a large percentage of catalog customers go online to buy, but they shop from the catalog. Acquisition and fulfillment relationships. Customers who have resolved problems are more loyal than those without problems. To the degree, it's almost tempting to create problems. Oh, I'll leave this item out of the order, because if I do and I fix it quickly, then they're going to be a loyal customer forever. There is definitely a service effect on the retention of your customers. So before you start a loyalty program, get your house in order. Make sure your service is good, high quality. And then you want to manage the lifetime value. You know, getting into lifetime value, when you start doing all of that stuff that makes your head spin around and your eyes roll back, that like future value of money and all of that, you don't have to go to that degree. Figure out a basic lifetime value calculation that works for your business and be consistent. And then you can see the trend, because that's really the issue that you're looking at. And in going for the gold, you want to increase the lifetime value. That sounds good, but that's a benign statement. When someone tells you that they're going to increase the lifetime value, ask how. You know why. Ask how. You can increase the average order. Just a small incremental change can increase the average order. For example, with your loyalty program, if you purchase $25, you get this many points, but if you purchase $100, you get a 10% bonus. That's going to drive up that average order. Reduce your costs. That's pay very, very close attention to every penny you spend, because when you're talking 10,000 pieces, a penny adds up pretty quickly. Increase orders per customer. Recent study they did said that only 26% of the customers surveyed, and again, listen to what they do, not what they say, but still, only 6% say marketers market to them too often. So increase how much you market to your good customers and see what effect. Test it. Test, test, test. Always test. And then increase the lifespan. When you keep those customers longer, their lifetime value is going to naturally increase. Getting started and developing a program, make sure that you have a really, really good foundation. Profile your customers, market by your customer preferences, do your lifetime value by profile, do your acquisition costs by source and profile, so you know how much, you know, if your value is less than your acquisition, then you might want to shift. And this goes back to the questions of how much should you put in social and how much should you put in traditional. Do the math. That's the only way you're going to know for sure. Test it and do the math. Watch your fulfillment costs. Make sure that inventory management is key to lowering, if you're selling products, inventory management is key to lowering fulfillment costs. The more times you ship, the more it's going to cost. It's just simple. And evaluate your business model, because sometimes your business model gets outdated and needs a little kick in the seat of the pants, if that aren't completely needs a makeover. Make sure you know what you're doing and don't follow the latest shiny new tool or toy, because there's plenty of them coming at you. And that's what a lot of them are. They're simply toys. They're not going to increase your revenue. They're not going to reduce your cost, and they're not going to make your customers happier.
Deborah, before going into the pitfalls, just a couple quick questions, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Let's see. One of them was around, you were talking a little bit about referrals, I believe. Can you talk at all about referrals and rewarding your customers for referring?
Yes. That, when you know what, let's start with your acquisition costs. If you know what it costs you to acquire a new customer, then you know what you can reward your customers for their referrals. And their referrals are going to be more targeted, they're going to last longer, and they're most likely going to make it to the platinum level. Because then you have two people that are friends that are working together, and they're saying, we like this. So determine your acquisition costs and then go in and offer, if you have a service, offer a free month of that service, offer a free year of that service if they hit a certain level. I always scratch my head when I see these promotions that say, refer a customer and we will give you $50, limit 10. You only want 10 customers? Well, that's odd. I want as many as I can get. It's why don't limit your customers. And you can make that choice if you know what your costs are and what your return's going to be.
Okay, that's great. And then what about several questions have come in about how many times you market to people until it's time to stop. You know, how do you get how many times do you email them? How many times do you have to market offers? And then, you know, when you realize that it's probably time to move on.
Well, it's time to move on when you have diminishing returns.
Okay.
And it's interesting, because if you had asked me this 5 years ago, I would have said never email more than once a week. Now I say never email once a week. Email more. But your emails have to have value. You've got to have something that the customers are wanting, and it's hard work. Maintaining that schedule is really hard work. But people will respond, and if you go through and you set your program and you're monitoring it, and then you see that people are becoming less responsive and they're opting out of your program, then you know you have crossed the line.
Okay, great.
Pitfalls now?
Yep.
Okay. Pitfalls to avoid. Poor foundation. We've talked a lot about establishing the foundation. Inaccurate data. Make sure that your data is spot on. check your data integrity, because a lot of times when you're using even a customized system, people create workarounds and they substitute codes and they do these little things, and that can skew your data. So make sure, track back to the raw data to make sure that it's accurate. Too much information. If you throw too much at customers, it's going to overwhelm them. Don't give them, well, if you do this, you get this, and if you do that, you get that, and if you do this, and if you do this, if you do this. Three options is about all they can handle. Don't go beyond that. Inconsistent implementation. Don't start something that you're not going to go through and make it consistently available across all lines. Barnes & Noble had a problem with that years ago, and it's one of the things that gave Amazon their toehold and the advantage to go ahead. It's because they segregated their bricks and mortar from their online activity, and you were either an online customer or you were a bricks and mortar customer, and the two never did meet. And so they had this card that allowed you to have discounts, but it didn't. You got it online or you got it at the store, and it was just confusing and it was inconsistent. And then, as I've talked about already, diminishing returns. Watch for those diminishing returns, especially when you get into social media. Social media can be a huge, huge time suck. It is a black hole, and you will go into that vortex if you're not very careful. Decide what you're going to do, do it, test it, evaluate, enhance, and evolve. That's what you need to do. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you so much, Deborah. That was a great presentation. We do have a few more questions, but I think what we'll do is either hold them to the end, or I think you're amenable to answering them offline afterwards, correct? So.
Oh, absolutely. Anybody can shoot me an email or call me.
Okay, great. So now we have Kevin Butler, the Marketing Programs Manager of CDC Software, and he's going to talk about some really interesting case studies regarding loyalty. So take it away, Kevin.
Thanks very much, Melissa. All right, just to follow through here, we have a few minutes left in today's webinar, so I'll try to get through things fairly quickly. And to the point Melissa mentioned, we'll be putting up email addresses of both myself and more importantly, Deborah, at the end of the webinar in case anyone has additional questions or comments and whatnot. So just before we get started here, I did want to do a bit of a customer showcase here and just to add a bit more insight into CDC Software, where in particularly our e-commerce and loyalty offerings. These two customers that I'm going to show are clients of ours, and they drive outstanding customer experiences with marketing loyalty using online auctions and rewards points. Of course, many of the recommendations Deborah had outlined earlier. So I'm really excited to be able to share those with you today. At CDC, we really see e-commerce and loyalty in very similar lights, and we believe they really do work well together. So our platform helps both traditional and non-traditional e-commerce companies utilize online purchases and purchase platforms the way to engage terrific experiences with clients and even drive additional revenue. So just going back to some of the key uses of loyalty programs, our clients are finding that loyalty and loyalty marketing is a great add-on solution to some of the existing things that they're already doing, things like email marketing. So that means their newsletters, growing their contact lists, referrals, whatnot, social media marketing, so certainly attaining and acquiring new followers, new fans, and into new networks, and just generally increased circulation in different media outlets, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, et cetera. Beyond that, driving web traffic, so we're talking about helping SEO efforts, maybe upsell and cross-sell conversions, and even finally direct mail. We talked about cataloging and whatnot, but certainly things like driving offline presence and just trying to make more awareness to that. Not everyone's online, and that's a great way to do that. So in my opinion, and with CDC Software, we really believe loyalty programs help sustain efforts that you're already doing. They really help pull all of your marketing initiatives together, whereas sometimes your email and your direct mail strategies may be very much different. These can help align that and really bring additional value to some of the ongoing initiatives you already have going on. And, these kinds of programs with loyalty and much of what Deborah was mentioning earlier, really rewarding your existing customers is such a difference maker in competitive marketplaces, and we're seeing that more and more across the board, regardless of what industry you're in. And one thing I really, really like about loyalty programs as a whole is getting your customers in the habit of buying from you more, talking about you, and just generally spreading the word about you. So if we want to look quickly here at Starwood Resorts, their strategy is focused on offering once-in-a-lifetime moments, so certainly things that you may not be able to buy, maybe you can, but maybe you can't, and really helping drive just wonderful experiences. So Starwood customers, they gain points for their business, whether it's stay at the hotels or whatnot, and they can use those points to bid on events and prizes, for example, like a Justin Timberlake concert, live sporting events, VIP packages, etc. And what Starwood's noticing is that these kinds of events and these kinds of offers are really generating incredible feedback and buzz. Their customers can't stop talking about them, and even if they don't necessarily win that bid or the opportunity to attend that event, it's still something that they were engaged in, they wanted to do, they most likely mentioned it, and repeatedly Starwood tells us how much of a hit this is with their clients. They heavily market these events to their customer bases, and they reap really huge rewards. Not only are the customers engaged, but they get huge buzz, and because they're able to attract such star performers or high-profile events, they really believe it helps set them apart in the marketplace, and it goes back to rewarding your customers, like Deborah mentioned, and especially with things like social media marketing. It really, really helps get that distribution and circulation to networks you may not have hit at the beginning. So really kudos to them. It's really thinking outside the box, and it's a great differentiator in such a competitive marketplace such as, you know, hotels and resorts. And jumping ahead, I just wanted to talk about J.P. Morgan Chase. So with J.P. Morgan Chase, this is a really great example of the flexibility of our platform and sort of the great three-dimensional thinking on their end from their team. So our solution is integrated with a third-party partner where Chase customers can purchase tickets to high-profile events and experiences similar to that of Starwood, but a little different nonetheless. The great part is these events and experiences can be made through redeeming points and or buying the required number of points with actual real-life money. Each of these offerings listed on the site can be set to a fixed price. So, for example, it's predetermined or a dynamic price where things like bidding, and that's where we get into some of the abilities of our platform is different, and any Chase customer can now bid up to the highest amount and just see what the highest goes for, and then maybe in a week or two, you know, similar to an eBay auction, but it's completely on Chase's web domain, they're able to drive that demand experience and get people really engaged as to what they're offering and just generally reward their clients for being loyal to them. So Chase's rewards program features really personalized offers. That's one of the really cool things about this offering. So whether it's different customer segments, for example, loyalty levels, geographic, et cetera, they're able to do that. So maybe they have regional-based loyalty offerings. Maybe they have national-based, et cetera. But there's really the sky's the limit in terms of the things that they can offer to their clients. And at the end of the day, the more targeted they can make some of these rewards, the more engaged they're going to be. So just again, I do want to keep things pretty quick because I believe we are running out of time. But you know, just going back to like the point of the Groupon question from earlier, I really like what Deborah said, and I agree with her wholeheartedly. There is no great way to say how am I going to test this, but you're really going to have to, and it's the easy answer for sure. But the thing with heavy discounts is both for pure play and multi-channel. You may be able to just run your own discount program internally first instead of going out externally to, say, Groupon's network and their base of customers who are very, very used to and almost expect they almost expect heavy discounts. You can run your own internally, right? Maybe you do through email blasts or direct marketing. You can use things like, for example, loyalty programs or even forms of fixed price bidding with online platforms like ours to be able to test that. And in terms of the other question I just wanted to weigh in really quickly on is deciding the percentage of which channel you test. Again, to Deborah's point, I agree that you're going to have to test and see which channel delivers what, and that is all based on what your kind of audience, how they react to that. But really what I would do is just test a number of different channels and then try to measure it accordingly and see whichever one's delivering the most engagement and interaction is the one to focus on. And maybe you can offer different offers and packages to different channels in order to try to differentiate and measure accordingly. But anyways, just to wrap up really quick, you know, we really believe that online auctions, the way a lot of both traditional e-commerce retailers and non-traditional e-commerce are going, and it's a great way for non-traditional companies who aren't necessarily selling direct products online to get online and reward customers. And it's a great way to increase interaction, loyalty, and reward your customers for sticking with you and give them a reason to continue sticking with you as the marketplace gets increasingly more challenging. So I'll just move to the next slide here and post our contact information. So by all means, if you have additional questions, because I believe we're out of time, please feel free to either email myself and or Deborah. I'm sure she'd love to get back to you as well. But I want to thank everyone for their time today and sticking around for this wonderful, wonderful webinar.
Great. Yes, thank you so much, Kevin and Deborah. There was a lot of great information transferred today, and I know our listeners were very engaged, so I thank you so much for speaking. I also thank the audience for listening, and on behalf of Retail Online Integration and CBC Software, I want to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you would just take a moment to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next, that would be really great because your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. Well, I hope to see you at the next ROI webinar. Thanks a lot, everybody.